Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. I'm not on the radio anymore. Apple Podcasts.
It's the future, baby.
Yeah, man. Wherever you get your podcast, go ahead and do that. Rate us, reviews, give us 5 stars, yelling us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think that you are a hater. It's interview day. Dominique Foxworth sitting across from me.
What up? Yeah, face to face. Our first time doing the podcast like this.
That's right. With a jacket that's far classier than his shirt.
Well, the shirt got wrinkled, man.
Here's what it looked like. It looked like it was time to get on TV. You went and got you some nice jackets. Right? Right? Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
And they rocked out the same shirts.
Why not? See, that's the thing. Is like I'll go halfway because I want to look nice, but I don't really care how nice I look. I'm married.
I guess. I'll never forget this. Did you ever watch Treme?
Mm-hmm.
You remember the second season, the con man?
Nah.
That is the Mexican con man season.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way I knew he was a con man, it was always expensive jackets, low budget shirts, and like expensive ties that barely match. But you ain't even doing the tie.
Nah, it's too much effort.
Hey, man. I heard that you made it awkward on Get Up this morning, man.
I make it awkward on a lot of shows I go on. So I didn't even think it was that bad.
And how'd it go?
So they were talking about Dabo Swinney was, he got asked who would play his wife in a movie. So first he said Matthew McConaughey would play him. And then he said the person who would play his wife would be, Kate Middleton. And then somebody on the set, Greenberg or Laura Rutledge, somebody said, do you think that he meant Meghan Markle because she was an actress? And then I followed up like, I never seen Dabo's wife before. However, I think it's safe to assume. Didn't he go to Alabama? I think it's safe to assume that his wife don't look like Meghan Markle. And everybody looked at me like I was like, I was proud of that because I'm normally not as tactful as that.
I thought that was well played.
They all looked at me like, like, no, I mean, you don't hear that accent? You don't hear that twang in his voice?
To be fair, though, any school, it would have been unlikely that, that his lady was out here looking like Meghan Markle. But that raises a question for me. Who did you say broached the topic of Meghan Markle?
I don't remember. It might have been Laura Rutledge.
Does she know?
Yeah.
She knows?
What are we talking about? That is what, Dabo's wife looks like?
No, that Meghan Markle, not.
She has to know.
Does she?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Nah, she's right out there. I'll go grab her.
I can't assume these things.
She has to know.
I can't assume these things.
Well, she knows after today.
No, man, Meghan Markle's at a place. Like, we have to acknowledge this, that, like, the notion of what being black is kind of arbitrary, right? It doesn't require very much. And you can fool some people sometimes.
Yeah, I imagine that Meghan Markle could fool some people, but she was like front page news for a while. People like dug into her past and there were stories about her family. Like,
right, but every time you see the family, what side of her family the one that always try to be on camera?
Yeah,
Kent, cool. It ain't us.
But it was a big deal. Like American princess who was black. Like that was a big thing, right?
Look, man, all that is true. I'm just going to tell you this. I had to sit out there and have a conversation. It may have been Pablo, I don't remember, but about Cassius Marsh.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to try to explain to people, no, I feel I can say this definitively. The dude named Cassius is black. I can do that.
Yeah.
I can do that. The last white Cassius I'd heard about was Cassius Clay, the abolitionist, for whom Muhammad Ali was named. Before that, I don't know the previous Cassius' last name because he was Greek and all they called him was Cassius.
Yeah.
That's how far back we got to go.
We took Cassius just like we took
them all.
Like we took Antoine. Yeah. We took that. That was Italian at some point. Give me that.
Yeah, that's right. We took them all. You know what? Here's the thing.
Jerome, that's us.
Here's the thing. We didn't take them. They deserted the property.
Call it what you want.
Yeah, right.
We put our flag in and another flag
like,
moved.
Like, I feel like what happened was we got enthusiastic about some of those names, and the first time a white man walked in the door and found out they expected Tyrone to be a black dude, they put that on the building link, on the next door app, whatever it was, and then next thing you know, they was out the game. They were like, no mas. No mas. This is not it. Look, we got to be real about this, right? All we got to do, if we want to have something for ourselves, is show up 5 deep.
It's over. It's
That's all we got to do. Like, I think about this. This is a restaurant in Raleigh, right? And it's a chain restaurant. Like, you know, the folks who are listening to this who are in the Triangle will know exactly the restaurant that I'm talking about. But somehow, Friday night at that spot became the Black Knight, right? And it's not like when you go in there on Friday, they got a DJ.
Nope.
You know what I'm saying? Like there's nothing going on. The menu hasn't changed. There's nothing that says, come Black people on Friday night. So I want to know, what was the fateful Friday night, right?
The tipping point.
Right, where enough Black people showed up and the white folks cleared out. And then the next Black person walked in and was like, oh, snap, this is our night. And then ever since then, and I'd wind up in conversations with people where they would be like, about the time that they went to Bahama Breeze on Friday night, right? Like, white folks being like, oh, I didn't realize that this is what had happened.
That needs to be a research. I mean, that is the research triangle. Someone needs to figure out when the tipping point was.
Yes.
And what started it? I want to know who was the trendsetter.
Right.
I want to know the first Black man in there on a Friday.
Right. Or did somebody just throw a party in there one Friday night, right? They had a birthday party or like a happy hour. And then, like, the word apparently spread real fast. Like, they were talking about going to Bahama Breeze on Friday night. Oh, well. There it is.
Yeah.
They were talking about going to Bahama Breeze on Friday night the same way that people in college would talk about, there's this club we go to called The Warehouse on Friday.
Yep.
And on Friday, The Warehouse is cracking, right? It was a college night and all that. On Saturday, it wasn't called The Warehouse no more. It was called Tracks.
Oh.
And it may have been cracking, but let me tell you what wasn't in there. Women.
So the question is, for The Warehouse and for Bahama Breeze and any of these restaurants, is how do they then react to it? Because there are restaurants that lean into it, and then there are restaurants who lean away no tennis shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
No hats.
No white t-shirts. Yeah. No athletic gear.
Or do you hire a DJ and lean in on this thing, baby?
I feel like you got to lean in.
You got to lean in.
I feel like you got to lean in on it. But you know, cats would go and it'd be like, oh, it's a gay club tonight. We had no idea.
Yeah.
But that's the way they was talking about going to Bahama Breeze. Like, they got there on Friday, you know? Like, have you ever made that mistake? Like, thinking you were going to a club on a night and it turns out it's the gay night?
Nah, I've never made that mistake. I made, so my father tells a story about, this is like his, he grew up in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Black dude, obviously. So he had many issues with race in that situation. But one of the stories that he tells is kind of like his civil rights moment. Mm-hmm. Is, he was an adult. It was after I was born. I was young. He went to, I guess he was stationed in Indianapolis, and when he first got there, he just went to the first barbershop he could find. It was a white barbershop.
Mm-hmm.
And the barbers was like, nah, we not used to this. And my father said, he got up and walked and sat in that chair and was like, well, I'm going to walk you through it.
Wow.
He just made him cut his hair.
Wow.
So
I care too much about.
Well.
I ain't no trading wheel.
I don't think you need a professional at this point.
Well, no, not now.
I think I just ruined the podcast.
You sure did.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, like I do remember one weekend I was in Atlanta and my homeboy had come in from out of town and we were driving past this one club and the lines, like, just dudes, like lines all the way down the block. And we were like, oh man, it must be cracking in here, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay, but we didn't wind up going to that spot for whatever reason. The next day, we walking through the mall. Again, it's Atlanta. It's an important detail. We're walking through the mall, and I saw some dude in, like, some leather. I guess it's the hot pants. Those, like, the black patent leather.
Oh.
Right, the whole fit. It was, like, a vest up top. Oh. Or like a
no shirt underneath?
No shirt underneath.
Oh, yeah.
And then I looked around a little more. What I didn't realize is it was Pride Weekend.
Oh.
But we talking about Pride Weekend
in Atlanta.
Yeah, like this is a different animal. You may have gone to Pride in whatever your city is. It ain't what Pride is in Atlanta. And then suddenly that club the night before made all the sense in the world.
I'd never been to the Super Bowl in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So I played in Atlanta for one season. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I really didn't love the nightlife there. But Super Bowl time is about a lot of parties and whatnot. So I'm interested to see what happens to the nightlife in Atlanta on Super Bowl weekend.
This is going to be a lot. Now, I was in college the mm-hmm. last time we had a Super Bowl in Atlanta.
You were there.
I almost got into the building.
Well, I mean, the game doesn't matter. I'm talking about the week prior.
Oh, yeah. I was there.
That's what
I
care about.
Yeah. I was there for the week. And the problem, and this is going to be a thing, Atlanta has poor public transportation. It is not really a taxi city.
It's spread out.
And it has the worst traffic situation in the world.
Yeah.
So, like, it's going to be a bit of a mess being in there. The city is outgrowing itself, and now we're going to throw, like, a giant event on top of it. But I often talk about two Americas.
Yeah.
There's going to be lots of two America scenarios that are going on with Super Bowl in Atlanta. Like when Outkast did their concerts at Centennial Park, those three shows in that tour, Garth Brooks was playing Phillips the same. He did like a week of shows at Phillips, and they're right, like the park is right next to, I guess it's now State Farm, but it's right next to the arena. And there's a curfew of sorts on the concert. So like everybody was coming out at the same time. And it was two Americas. It was like two completely separate lines. Now, one of the Americas was fairly mixed in demographics.
Right.
But it was still different America.
You knew what concert people was going to based on what they looked like walking through the streets.
Yes.
I think I might have told you this story before. Champ Bailey, one of my closer friends I played with in Denver, and he told me, when I first got traded down in Atlanta, I was like, yeah, what's Atlanta like? And he was like, well, Atlanta's cool, but outside of Atlanta is Georgia.
Yes.
And I feel like the same thing is going to happen. It's like, oh, am I going to an Atlanta party or am I going to a Georgia party?
Well, that's
party?
The thing. You had to point now where the parties you're going to ain't even going to be Atlanta parties, right?
Yeah,
because
true.
Let's be honest. Not only are we old, but let's be real about this.
I mean, I am old. You're young.
I'm older than you.
I mean, technically. However, I have a wife and three children,
that is true,
and I already had an NFL career. Like, I'm old.
Yeah, you're a retiree, right? Like, that is fair. Like, that. Here's the thing, though. Ain't neither one of us about to be out here kicking it with the general public. No disrespect to you, general public. But I'm going to be going to parties where I can get into with my tennis shoes because I am Bomani Jones. Meanwhile, you will be at these parties like, yo, can we get in with tennis shoes? Because you're going to be out here kicking it with the general population. Because of the general population, what are they telling the general population? No hats, no white T-shirts, no tennis shoes, no athletic gear.
Oh, full circle. Well done, Mr. Jones.
Yeah.
You're good at this.
What have they added to that list, by the way? Like, because that list has had to evolve.
I guess probably it's jeans with holes in them.
Yeah.
I think they've added that. Like, we need full jeans. We don't want no cut-up jeans. That suggests an element that we are not comfortable with.
No white socks, right?
No athletic socks. Yeah. I don't know what else they could add to it. Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like there's a lot of white people who are listening to this right now who don't really know what we're talking about because you ain't never truly been in no situation where they trying to keep you up out of there.
Yeah.
And so there's just a lot of layers that are put in to keep people out of stuff. And not going to lie. It's often appreciated, right? It is often appreciated.
Why haven't they? So we talked about things that black people have put the flag in, like names and stuff and nights at restaurants, and that other people may have scattered from that. Why hasn't this happened with like luxury brands? What type of marketing, or is it just because luxury brands still make a ton of money? Like I see Gucci Mane in a full Gucci outfit, and I still go to the fancy mall and see a white woman with a big Gucci purse. Like how are these things allowed to coexist?
That actually is interesting because that is one thing that we have shown up to do, and we have not been able to run them off of. Right? Gucci is like, and honestly, it'll be a letdown if we get to Gucci and then white folks leave, because then all of a sudden we ain't so fly for wearing Gucci. Now are we?
Nah. We got to move off Louis V if y'all don't want it.
Y'all, look, wherever y'all going, we coming too. Like, that's the thing about Atlanta also, because, you know, Atlanta's like the model for like suburban white flight.
Yeah.
All right? They ain't been able to run far enough away. At least not up 85 or 75. Hey, I don't know if I want to go there. But on 85 North, oh, no, like the idea that Domingos are from Gwinnett County, kind of mind-blowing, right?
Yeah.
But you know what happened? Y'all went out there. We came out there.
Because y'all go out there and then y'all build nice stuff.
Yes.
You start putting up strip malls with fancy new restaurants and outdoor shopping experiences.
And also, contrary to what you may have heard on some of these TV channels, we steady trying to come up. You know, like, I think that the racist presumption about black people is that whatever ain't right or whatever's going on, that we are just comfortable in that space. Oh, no, 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 no. We always want more. We don't just want more. We want all of it.
It's American. Yes. We are American. That is a very American thing to have. And if y'all ain't want us to come to nothing, y'all shouldn't have brought us.
But, like, I think about when I was working in college stuff, it was a lot more, like, there are plenty of poor white people in this world.
Obviously.
Right? I didn't feel like I caught too many of them in class, though.
Yeah.
I definitely caught poor black kids, right? Like, definitely caught I'm trying to come up and make this thing happen. Now, maybe it's the institutions that I was at or whatever, but we are not satisfied.
That's not just the institution. That's an interesting dynamic is I've had that same experience, and you've gotten multiple degrees. I've gotten a couple degrees, and your family's been in education.
Yeah.
Like, I never thought about that, but I wonder if it's about their admissions process, but I don't. It feels like I rarely come across not, there's plenty of poor white people, but yes. I rarely come across them in academic environments. I always remember, like, a lot of middle class, all the classes I was in,
yeah.
a lot of middle class to upper class white people, and the same, some middle class to upper class minorities, but all the poor people?
Yes.
All minorities.
Right, they're not. And I haven't studied this enough to know, like, what the process is and how that goes or whether the aspirations are the same. All I know is, wherever y'all at, we are trying to show up also. That is where we're going, and that may be the Bahama Breeze. I'm telling you, man, that night, it was just understood. Like, you know how cities where some streets would be the black night, some streets would be the white night? Yep. How does that happen?
I don't know, and I am really, I might quit and just go and research this all together because I want to know who first went there and then what was the reaction to it.
Yes.
I want to know first on both sides. The first black person that went there was like, hey guys, why don't y'all come over here? And the first white person say, looks like too many. I don't know about this, fellas. Maybe next week.
Well, what's the tipping point? Like, we talk about what's the tipping point, right? So I was reading something once about real estate and they said that with a neighborhood, 30% is the tipping point.
Right.
That if white people see a neighborhood's about 30% black, they will then deem that neighborhood to be black, and that neighborhood will then shortly become 100% black. Like it won't take long.
That's amazing.
Before that happens.
That's amazing because 30% is not a huge percentage. But
it's not
that's,
huge.
That's too much.
Though. No, it's not. Although I tell you, you hear a city got 30% black people, you're like, oh, damn,
oh, yeah.
It's a lot of black people.
What is it, 11 nationally?
It's like 11. Like
12?
Yeah, 12. Put it like this. Mississippi has the highest, and I think they're around 38. Now, that used to be like 55,
yeah,
you know, in that zone. But, yeah, no, that winds up being the tipping point. So what was the tipping point on the Bahama Breeze?
I'm just going to go ahead and say this: the model stands. Until someone proves otherwise, it's
30%. It's 30%.
Once you hit 30%, they're like, I don't know about this.
Well, I'll tell you where it is, the white knight, hiring NFL yeah. coaches.
I was wondering how you're going to do that.
Yeah, it's not always the white knight in hiring NFL coaches. I tell you what it was, though. If we weren't at 30% of black coaches, right? The percentage wasn't that high. It was more like about 20,
mm-hmm.
right? Or it didn't get to the tipping point. Before it could get to the tipping point. Excuse me, sir. I'm going to need you to step outside. Now, granted, a couple of them cats is in there acting up. You
yeah.
know what I mean? One dude would have been sitting at his table a little bit
yeah.
too long.
Yep.
Another one couldn't pay the check. Like, I understand
why
all those cats got cleared out for the most part. One of them, I feel like he just sat down and they immediately put a menu in his face and made him pay the check as soon as he ordered his food. But, you know.
You think Wilkes came in with a white t-shirt?
Dude,
he had a long white tee on, huh?
Man, they,
Steve
except,
Wilkes.
They barely, like, he got in. Like, what happened after he got in?
I don't know. Like, I'm hesitant to comment on that situation because it's such a radical move that I don't know what he was doing in that building. Like, you had to be doing something wild to be they had to recognize being in Arizona. I guess being in Arizona makes them care less about this. They had to recognize that him being black would play into this conversation. And they had to think, this won't be good for us PR-wise.
Right.
We're going to fire the black dude without giving him a real legitimate shot.
Right.
So I don't know what he was doing to make their PR staff and their ownership and their general manager to be like, nah, we good. We got to get him up out of here. That's crazy.
Yo, that I hadn't even thought about it on that level, but
and
that is
wouldn't
real.
Even, some, like, I would argue that someone would do that if they had somebody in mind. But they didn't have somebody in mind because they were with Cliff Kingsbury, who had already accepted another job.
Yeah,
so they just needed to get him out of there in 1 year so bad.
1 year. Now, granted, their offense was awful. I am amazed that they won 4 games. He tried to make all his changes at one time. But those all seemed to be, like, first-year coach mistakes.
Right.
You know, like, they didn't fire Vance Joseph last year in Denver. And I thought that there was much more of a case if you wanted to do that to fire him last year. Now, this year, I think there's even less of a case than there was last year.
Right.
But I remember when Sylvester Croom was coach at Mississippi State. He was the first black coach in the SEC, right?
Whoa.
And remember, they had a phrase called getting croomed because these coaches had this bad habit of going and losing the croom, and then suddenly they ain't got no job no more. That was like Ron Zook. That was an indignity that they could not suffer. They lost that game. They lost that game to Mississippi State. They let Zook coach out the year, but they were like, everybody needs to know, you're fired. This isn't going to happen. But, like, that was a really hard place to win, no matter what it was. Like, it's the worst job in the SEC.
Right.
I mean, well, other than Vanderbilt, but, you know. Anyway, I know that the SEC was very, very, very concerned and wanted to make sure that this dude got a fair shot, no matter what it was. And the way it ended for him was they asked him to fire some assistants. That's the way you do it, by the way. They asked him to fire some assistants, and he was like, nah, I can't do it, like a loyalty matter. Mm-hmm. And then, boom, he was gone. But there was no issue. Like, nobody feels like they did crew him wrong or anything like that, because they were like, yo, it can't look like this. Apparently, the Cardinals are like, nobody cares.
Nobody cares. I mean, we talk about the NFL a lot, but the issue of black coaches in college is far worse. And I think I was talking to Greenberg. It might have been off air where he was talking about his opinion on that, is that it's the boosters. Like, they're the decision makers, and they put the pressure, and they're not the one. They're never going to be – they're the ones who make the decisions, and they're never going to cape up, or rarely are they going to cape up for a black dude.
Well, here's what it is. The booster – the issue is that you have to go ask for money.
Right.
In order to pay. And so I think that is largely true, is that the booster's going to hire whoever it is that the booster wants, and the booster is in it for all kinds of bizarre, funny reasons. Mm-hmm. But I think that that is an attempt, not by Mike necessarily, but like the general argument there is often used as an attempt to otherize the situation. And this is what I mean. We can be like, oh, it's these boosters.
Right.
It's these rich guys. Mm-hmm. You know how these rich guys are, and they're doing it. But then you get over here to the NFL – and there aren't boosters. These are people supposed to be in the most cutthroat situation that you can imagine, where the bottom line matters more than anything else. And they still behave the exact same way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, it's not to absolve anybody of anything.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that the situation is entirely different in the NFL, though. Like, and it all stems from, in my mind, much of it stems from how you enter the coaching profession. And that, again, might absolve some people at the top because the pipeline is dry, and it's part because you have to become a coach is an unpaid position.
Yep.
Like, your first time is an unpaid position. And you know who can't disproportionately do these unpaid positions?
Yep.
Minorities.
And this is an economy-wide situation. Right. The coaches' sons have a leg up because they're in the game forever. And I can imagine what that advantage is. Like, I'm a professor's kid, right? And I will never forget me showing up on the yard as a freshman. I had a comfort. Like, it wasn't the college I grew up being around. I had a comfort level that nobody else had because none of this was new. Like, I understood what everything was going on. I knew what office to go to. I knew how to play. You know, like, I knew that because I was of it. And so coaches' sons always have this leg up because they're young and they're starting with so much more experience just by, like, exposure and what they're around. And so, yeah, like, if they want black folks to work in this game, then they're going to have to take more significant and, like, real steps to make it happen. But, man, it just happened to be the year that all these cats got cleared out. Like, Wilkes is going to go back to Carolina, and we'll see how he performs there. Because, look, if the defense does well there next year and they don't win, Wilkes can get that job.
Yeah.
Because Rivera will be out of there, and it's possible that he could then go in there and get that gig.
I haven't heard you on Kingsbury yet on that hire. Like, I'm interested to hear what your feelings are on that.
I have a couple of thoughts. So one of them, I start this. Have you ever met Cliff?
No.
Okay. We had Cliff on Highly Questionable a couple of times. And, like, you know how people, there's an interesting cultural thing that happens where some people are, like, more culturally inclined to be able or willing to acknowledge, like, the physical attractiveness man to man, right? A lot of cats, like, I guess the idea is, you know, a handsome man, but you see one, you just don't want to admit it. Honestly, I really don't know. I truly and honestly don't have a gauge on such a thing. Dude, we were interviewing Cliff Kingsbury, and I was like, wow, that's a good looking dude. You know? And he's a smooth cat, too.
Yeah.
Like, I imagine.
That's probably what you sense more than anything.
Yeah, I was like, wow, this is wild, right? Yeah. And so I bet you this. Can you imagine how good a life Cliff Kingsbury lived as a backup quarterback in the NFL? Well, you don't actually have to show up to these meetings, but you showing up in the spot, right? And they already checking for you when you get in the spot. And then they ask, what do? You know, I play for the Broncos. Yeah, I'm a quarterback. Right? Like, can you imagine that? Like, can you imagine, like, the life?
I can't. I had to wear my team issue out. I mean, I'm a regular sized dude.
Football players stay having to do that stuff.
Seat reserve for
Dominique Foxworth.
I had to wear my jersey to the club.
Right. So, like, Cliff is, like, super charmer dude. He is that guy. I could see how it could be, like, some interview situation, and he's in there, and he just mesmerizes this whole room and gets the job. That's not what happened here. Like, I thought he was going to go to USC and he was going to quit and start doing movies.
Yeah.
Right? Can you, like, imagine him out there?
If they won and he was good, it would be, he, jumping off point. He'd be done with football.
He actually looked like one of them dudes in the movies. I think it's Ryan Gosling. I don't really be knowing their names like that. He could be going into spots and be like, yo, Ryan Gosling's here, you know, and just like wave around and all that stuff. But they're hiring him to be a head football coach.
Yeah,
and I ain't never heard of a situation where a dude gets fired. Look, when he got, think about this. When he got fired at Texas Tech, there was no outcry.
Yep.
No one thought that Texas Tech, and look, Texas Tech is one of those schools where you get to look at them and be like, be real about who you are and keep your expectations reasonable. Nobody said that when Cliff got fired.
No college team wanted him.
Right. He did not get hired as a head coach anywhere in college. But I'm supposed to understand why he's an exciting NFL hire? Like that logically just doesn't make any sense. Because I did think this for USC. Even if there were other head coaching offers, USC was the groove because, I mean, Clay Helton is on the, like, kick else time in his the USC. That's a one-year job. Like, if Kingsbury went there and he made, and the offense got to going or whatever, that's probably his job the next year. You ain't beating that.
Player talent.
Yeah.
They're going to recruit well.
But I didn't hear about him turning down no head coaching job. I didn't hear about any of that. And now, like, there was a line? Like, all these people who want to hire him?
So, I've written and talked about this a bunch over the years about how faulty and flawed this logic is for how you hire coaches. Traditionally, it's like, who was near the guy who was successful or who had coordinated the best offense or coordinated the best defense, we're going to make him the head coach. The flaw in that is obvious to me because the guy, the skills that are required to succeed at a coordinator are different than the skills that are required to succeed at a head coach. But Cliff Kingsbury isn't even one of those. Like, so the only thing, so Laura Rutledge, who covers college football, mentioned earlier that Cliff has some long-lasting relationships with some of his players. And that was the only bit of light for me to consider that this might be a good hire. Because I believe that building relationships is important to leading an organization from that position.
Yeah.
So aside from that, I don't, and there's no evidence that he's been able to do that at any other place, but I'm going out on that. That's the only thing I could argue, because if you asked them to come out and justify their decision, what would they say? Sean McVay did it.
They put it in the press release. Did you see that?
I refuse to accept that they did that.
I saw it
on the internet. It's no way. That's embarrassing.
They put in the press release, Kingsbury is
friends
with Sean McVay.
Nope. So?
What
does that mean?
They put it in the press release. That's how thirsty all of them are. You saw, but McVay had a great line about that, right? You see what he said? I'm too young to have a coaching tree. Right? He's like, what are you doing? Because also, if you're Sean McVay, you know why you're saying I'm too young to be a coaching tree? Because, yo, I am the opening act, the headliner, and the after party. Would you think you can just go get another me?
Yeah, that's, I mean, you can't. And the idea that, so in general, I think that's a faulty process, but also think even if you do find an offensive genius, that's not sustainable.
Oh.
You can't compete. There's a few things that have caught up. So, like, you're not going to be in better shape than other teams. You're not going to outwork other teams.
Right.
You're not going to out-physical other teams. You're not going to consistently out-coach other teams because you have to come up with some new stuff every year. They're going to figure out what you're doing, and they're going to adjust to it. You betting on this guy's offensive ability is betting that they ain't never going to catch up to him, that he always going to be one step ahead. What makes you think that Cliff Kingsbury is always going to be one step ahead?
You know who used to be a step ahead?
Who?
Chip Kelly.
Yep. And they caught up.
Hold on. Really think about this, though.
Yeah.
As recently as 2013, Chip Kelly was the future.
Yep.
Everything, like, think about it, just the whole Oregon football program. All of it was the future. It's nothing now. like not in that way. Not that the program is nothing, but it ain't the future. It's a program. And so you always have to go and try to find what this edge is that's going to get you to a place. My thing with Kingsbury is I don't feel like anybody's even done like scrutinized this just a little bit. So Mahomes, he's getting credit for Mayfield, Mahomes, and I guess Davis Webb to a degree.
Okay, maybe I give you some love for Davis Webb, but you get no credit for Mayfield and Mahomes.
Well, to be fair, he had Mayfield as a true freshman walk-on.
Okay.
And he was the guy who was like, no, we're going to start this dude. But then Mayfield got hurt, and he ultimately went to Davis Webb, and then Mayfield went to Oklahoma and made genius out of Lincoln Riley. They both can't get to be geniuses
because of
Baker Mayfield. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, that one. Mahomes, I had people arguing with me about this yesterday. Yo, the thing with Mahomes was, it's not that nobody knew he had this big arm. It's not that nobody knew that he had this level of talent. He was rough, though. Like, he was a raw prospect that Andy Reid has done a great job with. So what part of this am I giving Kingsbury credit for?
He was underdrafted because of how he performed in college.
Right.
He outperformed. The argument would be if Mahomes came to the league and was stink.
Yes.
I'd be like, oh, what was you doing with Mahomes?
Exactly.
He came to the league. He's better in the NFL than he was at Texas Tech against Big 12 defenses.
Right. And that, but see, that's the other argument. The other argument that they're making for Cliff is, well, it's hard to win at Texas Tech. It's hard to recruit at Texas Tech. And it is. The thing, if you are not from Texas, that's hard to explain to people is what this Lubbock thing is. And if you're from Houston or Dallas, Lubbock ain't really, like, you're not going there if you got the option of going somewhere else, right? Okay. But every coach the last 30 years has performed better than Kingsbury has. Every coach the last 30 years has performed better than he did. The argument is that he couldn't get a defense, and I hear you, but you're giving his offense credit playing in a conference that really is eight schools that have real impediments to building a defense.
He is the head coach. He's responsible for that defense also.
That's the next part.
Why would you hire, if you want him to be OC, hire him to be OC. If you think your OC, the coordination of your offense is more valuable than whatever organizational management the head coach could bring, then pay him more than the head coach to be the OC. I don't get any of this. None of it makes sense. I feel like we're in the majority on this though, right? Most people think this is a bad hire, right?
I think it's a little split.
Really?
I think it's, I think probably.
So what's the argument for it being a good hire? I mentioned that Laura Rutledge told me that he has long lasting relationship with players. If he is good with players, that would be my argument.
The argument is that he is somehow ahead of the curve offensively. And right, like this thing, here's where I think people are messing up. Like I was thinking about this, I talked about it on TV a couple of days ago. You know what the Colts did with Peyton Manning? They hired defensive guys.
Right.
You know, now, say what you want about, like, the early time with Mora, but Mora had a 13-3 season with him.
Yep.
And then they brought in Tony Dungy, and you know who ran the offense? Peyton Manning.
Oh,
right?
I know all too well.
Yeah, right. Peyton Manning ran the offense, and that, to me, like, I looked at the hire in New England, and not New England, in Green Bay. And I'm like, yo, why are you getting a quarterback guru when you got Aaron Rodgers, right? Like, go take care of this other side. Like, everybody believes that you need to get this guy for the quarterback, but I don't think people make the right arguments about what guy you need for the quarterback. So with the Jets, for example, I thought about it today. You know who they should hire? If the quarterback is your concern, Caldwell. And the reason is you don't hire Caldwell to scheme up your quarterback. You get Caldwell to make your quarterback better. It's what he did with Peyton Manning. Yep. It's what he did with Matthew Stafford, who, by the way, didn't look so good.
Yep.
This last year with Caldwell out of there. Like, you get it. If you want somebody to develop your quarterback, then get a guy to develop your quarterback. This idea that we're just going to get somebody to scheme it all the way up.
And
no.
Remove impediments. Like, we talked about this before. You need to remove impediments for your quarterback. That's what you should bring in, whatever quarterback whisperer. Not someone who's going to come in there and, like, I'm going to get you some easy throws. Like, that's what you do if you got a bad quarterback.
Yes.
A good quarterback don't need no easy throws. He's going to figure this out. I promise you.
Right. And so, like, I just look at all of it in just their thought process. Like, with the Rams also. If you got your Sean McVay, who's going to be your Wade Phillips?
It's a good question.
You know, because that's how this model works in college, is that you go out and you get the $2.5 million defensive coordinator or something like that. That's how you make this happen.
Does Kingsbury have, like, he doesn't, when you hire a coach, it's like marrying into a family. You get everything that comes with it. I'm not sure what Kingsbury, his coaching tree looks like, what resources he has to draw on. Like, who's he going to bring in? He going to bring in that guy who had a negative 700 EPA on defense in Lubbock? Oh, sure as hell hope not.
By the way, I almost forgot. As we give him this credit, we also give him credit for Johnny Manziel because he's quarterback coach under Sumlin. Manziel was ignoring what they were telling him to do all the time.
They're freaking.
Like, yeah, no. Like, his success stories are, I don't know about this, man. I don't know. And, like,
why I don't understand why I asked you what was the argument on the other side. Because every argument on the other side has such gaping holes. Like, I can't understand how anybody short of Cliff Kingsbury's mom could feel comfortable about this being a good hire. And the Packers are lucky that this happened because we moved off of that dumb hire.
Yes, yeah. You just make up an offensive coordinator. Like, all of these things are arguments for offensive coordinator. I tell you this, though, who I think just made a good idea hire, Tampa.
Yeah.
Like, Arians. Well, one thing they did was they found a guy that believes in Jameis.
Right.
And I don't know how easy that was going to be for them to find. But they found a guy who absolutely believes. I bet he's looking at these other cats' room. I can fix this. And to be honest, his track record indicates he can probably do, like, good stuff with him. But Arians is also going to be the head coach of your team.
Yeah.
We have seen him demonstrate an ability to be the head coach of your team. Cliff has demonstrated he has not been that good at being the head coach
or being a quarterback whisperer.
Yes.
Like, I'm stuck on this. I'm sorry. We'll move forward because I don't feel like you have a good answer for it. You're one of the smartest people mm-hmm. I know when it comes to sports, and you can't formulate a respectable argument for why this was a good hire. Mm-mm. Then we have to be able to put together an argument because there were some people who sat in a room and made this decision, and they talked through all the key points. I'm assuming they did, or maybe
everybody just wants to get Sean McVay at once. They acknowledge that Sean McVay is singular. At the same time, they're trying to go get another one.
So you're telling me this is how the meeting went. Cliff walked out of the room. They did whatever other interviews they did. Cliff walked out, and they was like, so who we gonna go with? And one guy was like, I really like that Cliff guy. And the other guy was like, why you feel good about Cliff? He was like, Sean McVay, he met him one time. Yeah, let's do that.
Nah, I think that Cliff went in and made that presentation.
And
some dude sat up in his seat, put his legal pad on his lap, and said, that's our guy. I just think he went in there and gamed him up.
You remember a couple weeks ago when rumors started coming out about teams hiring search firms to find a head coach, and everybody was up in arms. I remember thinking, I didn't really get involved in this because I didn't feel like having that particular smoke at the time, but I don't think that's a bad idea because they have processes that will that you can follow. It'll at least force you to ask and answer some questions. I don't think that's a terrible idea, especially when you see stuff like this. Like, they need a search firm.
But let me tell you what tells me that none of these cats have any idea what they're doing, that they're all just guessing. If your guy, John Harbaugh, became available, there would be a line of teams to hire him. And you and I have the same feeling about why, like, Harbaugh is in the model I think you should have of a coach, where the most important thing is we need somebody to run this operation. And he knows how to run this operation.
The older I get, the more experience I get, I realize that, and this is probably something that is more consistent with men, is when you see problems, you want to fix them with something like tactile almost. You're like, all right, that's a problem. Let me grab a wrench and fix it. Like, I've come to appreciate and understand that sustainable solutions in situations that involve people are often soft.
Yes.
They're like soft skill solutions. And that's what I think that John Harbaugh did. And I didn't recognize it at the time. It didn't necessarily work on me all that well because I was a cynical little dude. But when I signed with the Ravens as a free agent, the first time I met John Harbaugh, he brought me in his office, and I had my phone in my hand. I put it down on the table, face up. It went to the sleep screen, and there was a globe on there. And he's like, oh, man, you a worldly guy. He's like, you must be thinking of existential things. And I was like, oh, actually, it's just the default. And I played it off. We moved on. I never forgot it. Later on, I had an injury, and I was in the training room, getting treatment, and I was reading a book. And he came in and had a 45-minute conversation with me about the book I was reading. And I was sitting there like, man, what's this get on my face? Like, nobody want to talk to you right now. I'm hurt. I don't care about this. But what he was doing is being a head coach. Like, he was developing relationships with someone on his team that had a important position. And, that is what being a head coach is.
Right.
If you think that the solution is, no, we're going to come in with these new plays. No, you're not going to be able to outplay the people next to you. Coming in, and people talk about changing culture, that's how you change a culture, is develop relationships. You can't just install a culture just because you know one. You have to take the resources and the people and the unique processes that are at a particular organization and cultivate a culture that works in that scenario. So, I don't know. I like this stuff. I could go on this for hours,
bottom line
is they stupid.
They just guessing, man.
They just guessing.
That's all this comes down to, is they are just guessing. I will say this, though. If Cliff had gotten that Jets job, dude, the circus that would have turned into here. Because if I'm not mistaken, Cliff is single.
Yeah.
The circus that New York City would have been if Cliff Kingsbury
and Cliff,
showed up in town.
Like, he strikes me, I don't know him like you know him, but he strikes me as someone who enjoys, he always got his sunglasses on.
Yeah. No.
His suit's so sharp. Yeah. He feeds into this.
Yo, let me tell you about them suits. It's funny you mentioned that. I said we had him on Highly Questionable twice, right? And by the way, he remembered where I went to high school on the second one. And I don't even know if I don't even know if I told him. Right.
But
you gotta understand, cause that's one thing about them Texas college coaches. They gotta know all the little towns and stuff, right? He came in, the Big 12 guys, they'd always have the same dress code. Like, some years they'd come in and they all wearing polos or something like that. And I remember, I think the first year, I think he came in wearing a polo or something in that effect. Dog, I think he had a tux on, like, the second time. Like, it didn't look like, it looked like it went way beyond the suit. Like, he knows what the brand is, baby. He knows what time it is on this.
I love it. I'm all in for Cliff Kingsbury as a show. So I'm not mad that he's in the league. I'm not mad at him for getting a job, get your money. I'm not knocking anybody for any of that stuff, but I just don't understand it.
No. Everybody's just like, yo, we need a great offensive guy to be the head coach. And I can understand if you decide that that's a necessary condition, but it can't be a sufficient one. Yeah.
I don't think it's a necessary condition, but I could understand you getting there. And I think a lot of smart football people come to the position where they believe that you have to get an offensive minded head coach. And they support it by saying, if you just make him a coordinator, he'll leave to be a head coach elsewhere.
Yes.
But my opinion is, unless you've actually found someone who is a genius, who like is literally a genius and will be a step ahead of everyone else, then that's fine. He can go. What you can't let leave is someone who's leading your organization. So you need to get someone who's competent and capable of that. It doesn't matter. Harbaugh was a special teams coach.
Right.
And you could argue that being a special teams coach is the thing that prepares you most for leading a team, because you don't have a unit when you're special teams. Right. You don't have any real way to discipline or to get people to respect or treat you with any respect, because you're the special teams coach. Don't nobody want to do that.
Right.
Like, there's like three guys who are like, this is the only way I'm being in the league. But you got to fill up the rest of them positions with dudes who don't want to do that. Like, right. That is a real training ground for how you become a head coach.
That's a great point. Nobody's out. Nobody's happy to be here. Right. Why am I here? Because I'm number five on the depth chart.
Ever met somebody who was like a kid who was like, when I grow up, I'm going to go down and bust that wedge.
Especially all those jobs are hazardous. No, that was the other
don't part. Nobody want to do that?
Oh, the wedge buster.
And we don't mind doing hazardous jobs if they come with big money and acclaim. Not name a wedge buster.
I guess now that they've outlawed three-man wedge, that is something that the children will not understand. Is there used to be a guy whose whole job was to hurl himself into three people who have locked arms.
It was to go get a concussion. And they started changing, like, your job right now, go knock yourself out cold. They started changing it in college. So we used to have wedges made up of running backs and fullbacks and, like, athletic guys, because the wedge was made up of – so there's a front line on kickoff, then there's the returner, then there's the middle line.
Right.
And you might sometimes kick it to the middle line, so they would put athletic guys in there. Right. They changed that. When I was in college, they changed it to start putting offensive linemen in the wedge. And there were not defensive linemen running down on kickoff because you got to run 60 yards. So they would put safeties and maybe some linebackers, but mostly safeties and corners on kickoff, and somebody had to go bust that wedge that was made up of, in college at least, made up of 200 to 300 pound guys. What? You don't think that is a training ground for learning how to deal with individuals if you gotta talk a 225 pound safety into explaining to him why this is a good idea?
That's a great point.
It's the same thing for like all of those positions. So field goal, essentially on field goal team, is you're just there to take a shot. Those are mostly offensive linemen, but field goal teams, you can't shoot out. You just got to lean in and get lit. That's whenever I've seen those meetings, they talk about how that old motto of you can do anything for 3 seconds. When you got to lead with that, the job that you're doing is terrible. That was like the motto of all the field goal teams I'd ever been around. It's like, hey guys, you can do anything for 3 seconds. Lean in, take that shot, get us these 3 points, which is why players overreact when kickers miss field goals. Cause you're like, man, I just took this lightweight concussion for y'all. And you kicked it over there. Like, I mean, I may be eating my dinner through a straw when I'm 60, but you couldn't kick the ball through an upright.
Oh, man.
And it's same. So on punt team, you got to be a gunner. They normally double team gunners. So you're going to go out there and be like, all right, my job is to take these two guys, and you see them getting thrown up under the Gatorade bench.
Yeah.
Like, this is my job, is to beat a 2-on-1 where they not throwing a flag and they just essentially assaulting me. Like, they get arrested on the street. Like, that's – so anyway, hire special teams coach.
Yo, let me tell you, man. Let me give you my impression of a punt returner. What it look like if I was a punt returner. Right here, I got my right hand, and I'm waving it over my head. Everyone, possession is more important, man.
One of my best friends from college was like a record setting. I think when he graduated, he had the record for most punt returns for touchdown in college, I believe. Steve Suter was his name. He was very proud of the fact that he had never called a fair catch in college.
I thought you were gonna say he's the all-time leader in fair catches, which is a record I would aspire to.
That is a thing that punt returners actually believe is like, nah, we don't fair catch.
Well, you remember Pac-Man Jones went like 10 years
without
a fair catch, which to me tells you everything you need to know about the man that we are dealing with, right? Like, I feel like that is a metaphor for Pac-Man Jones' life. Pac-Man Jones don't, he don't fair catch nothing.
Fair catching is all about judgment.
Right? Like, I don't even know if he even let any of them go over his head. Mm-mm. Like, he's just like, yo, what's coming is coming. Right? that's all that is. Whatever's coming down the pike. Yep. I remember I was in seventh grade and I was on the kickoff team.
Ooh.
I had the outside lane though.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
That was perfect. Right, because I wasn't really that interested in contact, and the coaches are always trying to teach discipline that doesn't work, which is just maintain your lane when everybody wants to go out there and make a tackle. Not me.
Maintain your lane.
I maintain my lane. At one point, they told me they were thinking about having me as a kick returner.
Huh?
And I remember my head shot up like, oh, no, I don't want to do that.
That is hilarious. I forget because like my most recent football memories are like at the highest level. I forget that. At every level, there are people who don't want this smoke. They don't want that. Like, they don't really want that. I want to be on the team.
Yeah.
I want to play. I want to catch a touchdown, but I don't really want to play football.
Yeah, you don't know what it is until you know what it is.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's what the issue is.
Because the idea of somebody saying, no, I don't want to return kicks. Like, hearing you say that seems obvious now, but it seems weird to me.
Yeah, I tell you this, though. I bet you by, like, year six, you was out here like, nah, I ain't really trying to run no kickback.
Nah, I wasn't trying to run no kicks back in the league. That wasn't happening. Rookie year had a couple interceptions and had some pretty good returns. And Coach Shanahan asked me if I ever return punts. And I was like, nah. He's like, you want to get back there and practice a couple? Nah. I'm good. You got all these other dudes that did it in college. I ain't do it in college. I'm good.
Like, I'm trying to
learn how to play corner.
Right. If that was in my skill set, somebody would have let me know this already by now. Think about that, man. It's 10 dudes running as fast as they can at you. And all you got is some of your partners. Right, some of whom
that don't want to be there.
Right, some of whom have already fallen down. Right, there's no glory in their jobs whatsoever. No,
not one time have I seen AFC Player of the Week front line on kickoffs. Ain't nobody out there trying to make no money doing that.
Like, they do not get Special Teams Player of the Week.
No, miss me on all of that.
What do you think when you have people being like, "Yeah, Trevor Lawrence"? If he was in the 2019 draft, he'd be the number one over. He could play in the NFL tomorrow.
Yeah, I listened to your podcast, so I heard you say that you didn't think so. And I think so. I think he could be, and I think he could play in the NFL tomorrow, and I think he would be the number one overall pick.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you believe that he should be able to, but you don't think.
Yeah, I think he could.
He should.
I'm there with talent, right? Mm-hmm. It's not even a matter of like how well he plays. I just feel like, you put him out there and he'll learn a lot in them 4 to 6 weeks when he's sitting over there in the sideline in a sling, you know, cause they have rocked his world. Like, I feel like you need to take a little time to, like, a few reps without the best in the world trying to attach you. Like, what we're talking about here is like skipping grades.
Right.
And it's not always the best idea to skip a grade.
You know that firsthand, but I do think that, so it's only one time, but a 19-year-old, first-round pick, Amobi Okoye, played defensive tackle and drafted by Houston out of Louisville, and he played defensive tackle doing it. So maybe that's we just haven't seen other people try it. We assume that they can't do it because we haven't seen people try it.
But nobody ever described that dude as wispy. You know what I'm saying? Spindly.
But I don't think that's so he's 6'6", right, or 6'5".
Yeah.
I don't know how much he weighs, but I imagine that
it's a listed 215.
Looking at him doesn't seem like he doesn't look like an NFL quarterback.
No.
Are you saying that, I guess this isn't a great necessarily definitive answer, but there are a lot of starting quarterbacks in NFL right now that I think you would rather have Trevor Lawrence over.
I think that he is a better player than a lot of those dudes. But like, if I'm him,
that doesn't mean it's best for him.
Yeah, this ain't a good idea. And I don't think it would necessarily be the best idea for some of the teams to do that. Also, man, like, I think the part that gets lost in this, because we're like, it's because college doesn't pay. And so we're like, you know, stop working for these oppressive overlords. So, like, I think we all have that thought process. But, hey, man, I can't imagine being 19 years old. You're supposed to be the face of an NFL franchise. Like, the magnitude of that is absurd. You know, and some people are built for it.
Yeah.
But you're asking for a lot here to ask somebody to come do that. Because Trevor Lawrence right now, this is all still really cool to him.
Yeah, but he was groomed for this. Like, this doesn't seem – new. Like this, no. He seemed comfortable. He expected this. He expects success at the next level. Everything I've heard says that he doesn't want to leave. Like he's enjoying college, which is, I understand. Like the only difference that makes, like he can ball out against bad competition, get all the press and accolades and all the perks that come with being a superstar athlete. The only drawback is the money.
Yeah.
And that's a major drawback, but it's also the clock that's attached to the money.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, it's dilemmas all around, right? Now, let me ask you this. Who ran to y'all when you were at Maryland? Because you were there when they won the national championship, right?
Basketball?
Yeah.
Yeah, they won the national championship, so yeah.
Yeah, but who was running to y'all when you were at? Like, who was that dude at Maryland? I mean, other than you.
Like, a football player?
Anybody.
Well, I mean, Juan Dixon was the man. They won the national championship that year.
Imagine how many orders of magnitude man Trevor Lawrence is at Clemson.
I didn't know where you were going, but
I was there when they won a national championship, right? Like, I bet Chris Wilcox, I bet he was doing work.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Blake, I bet it was good to be him at that time. It ain't nothing like what it's got to be Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, you had the drawback in College Park of it being, like, 10 minutes from D.C. also. So, don't nobody care.
Yeah.
But Columbus? Ain't nothing there but Trevor Lawrence.
No, Clemson is in Clemson.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Clemson.
Yeah,
I don't think Columbia.
Yeah, Columbia. USC. South Carolina.
Oh, they don't like USC?
USC, the trademark is owned by the University of Southern California, and it is a point of contention for the South Carolina fans. They want to call themselves Carolina, but come on now. They want to call themselves USC, but come on now.
That's right. I forgot that Clemson is in Clemson.
Clemson is in Clemson.
Is Atlanta the closest city? Major city?
Not, which is like hour and a half.
That's
like
not close.
Hours. It's not close. You can get to Charlotte, in the other direction and not, you're right. Like, you can't go kick it in Atlanta and then come back.
He is the king.
He is
of
the
Clemson.
King. He is the
like,
king.
In a 30-mile radius of Clemson, everyone knows who he is and treats him with the utmost respect. That's not what his life is going to be like in 3 years.
I tell you this, I wonder how much he's actually going to be able to kick it on the yard. Like, I know with Manziel, they had to put that dude in online classes because it just get to be too much, right? Like, he is the dude they have literally waited their whole lives for.
Yeah.
Think about how much they love Deshaun Watson. And they legitimately do love Deshaun Watson. And how thankful they were to have a talent like Deshaun Watson on the yard.
Deshaun Watson don't got them locks, though.
And now they got this dude. And they got a national two more years. And all them dudes are sophomores. That whole squad. Both of them squads.
Their D-line, though, is going to experience a big turnover. So I think that's underappreciated for their future. But my assumption is, given the fact that they
I feel like they got more.
I heard you make that point before that Clemson or Alabama is definitely deeper because there ain't no Renfros on that roster, which is early. There are no hard luck stories on there. The hardest luck story that they got is, I think they got a running back that was a 3-star.
Yes.
Like, this boy was a 3-star. He was in Oklahoma and ain't nobody even care about him.
They always have like 2 3-stars and I'm like, son, how good are your grades? Like, how did you manage to get on this list? Or did you like peak early and they just don't want to pull back your offer? Cause their list, I just go through it and I'm just like, yo, 5-star, 5-star, 4-star, 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 5-star. And they get them from everywhere. Like they are dominating. Here's how cold Atlanta's recruiting, Alabama's recruiting is. They don't even recruit Atlanta.
At all?
I've gone through the last few recruiting classes and I saw like 3 guys in there. They're not even there. And I don't know like what it is to recruit Atlanta these days because that's what Clemson's doing. Clemson goes pretty hard in Atlanta. Alabama's a couple hours away, man. They're like, no, we don't even need that. They're going getting dudes from San Francisco.
That's crazy.
You know, they're going getting dudes from Brooklyn.
Hold up. They went all the way to across the Pacific to get a quarterback. So you can stop at that. San Francisco?
Yes.
Man, they got a man named Tagovailoa. Like, they going everywhere to get these players. And I'm not sure that Clemson is doing that, but they can now.
But I'll ask this last thing before we go, because I know you got somewhere to be. How nervous do you think Tua was about seeing his daddy after that game?
That's so sad.
I think, is that an unfair question?
No, it's not an unfair question.
Is it wrong to ask? Because I wouldn't want to see him.
Nah, it's not an unfair question. He's one of those dads who, they said it multiple times, he made his son become a left-hander.
Yo, that's a red flag.
I draw the line right there. That is borderline Joe Jackson level.
That's Marv Marinovich.
Yeah,
That's what Marv Marinovich did. That is the red flag for me. You know, to have 400 family members there, like, I'll give him this. If that young man could come after that game and go face them with his head held high, he is the strongest literally the strongest college sophomore that I've ever been around. Cause, you know, it got a little awkward where, you know, he did the story about him, and it's just kind of like, yo, it sounds like daddy is hard on him to a point that borders on illegal, right? So now we kind of have to, like, when we talk about it, we got to come in this other direction because nobody really knows what to do with it. And it's like some cultural relativity stuff on corporal punishment. So it's like an awkward, you know, like it's a whole bunch of awkwardness to talk about here. But I heard that thing about the left hand and I was like, oh no.
Yeah, when I heard that too, I was,
But you know, I worry about, you know, we got a little brother. That's coming to Alabama.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. He can be quarterback too?
Yeah, I hope he's good. Like, can you imagine the pressure that he's under?
That's depressing, man. I don't want to, because you think, like, if you don't succeed, where do you turn? Nobody on that campus cares about you.
Yes.
If you're not good.
Yes.
We had a player in Baltimore who we ended up buying him some teeth because he, talk about people, he was a free agent that we signed. He wasn't even drafted. He wasn't like a top player, but he was good enough. And when he got there, they put him in position, and I was like, he's too small for that position. So then eventually we saw, like, some college tape of him. He had lost, like, 30 pounds, and his bottom row of teeth were, like, all jacked up. And he was there for 5 years. And I was like, man, it just hurt my heart because he went from Alabama to eating every day to not being able to eat or work out and lost, like, 40 pounds.
Oh, because he's, like, sending money home and stuff?
Yeah, between the draft or in between the end of the season and draft, he lost, like, 40 pounds. His teeth was all messed up because he's from a bad place. And I just was like, that just made me really sad that they would spend the guy up like that and then send him out there with no teeth.
With no teeth.
Like, you got dental there. The least they could have done is hook my man up with some teeth.
Dude, and that's the one thing. Like, I don't know exactly, like, how all that stuff works. Because when I look up, and this is, like, NCAA stuff that people don't think about, I enjoy when I look up and I see a dude with braces. Because I know some booster out here making something right.
Like, thank you.
That's the stuff. Like, if you don't want him to get no money, that's fine. You okay with braces? You know what I mean? Because that kind of stuff matters a lot.
I mean, you have access to healthcare when you are a player. I think you can get that. I'm not 100% sure. I shouldn't be saying this willy-nilly, but I do remember guys showing up at Maryland and suddenly getting braces. I think you can get these type of things through health insurance that you get as a player.
Well, if you can, that's good, right? Because that, like, those are the, like, SB Nation did a story once about the bag man, right? Mm-hmm. And then one thing the bag man was saying was like, nah, man, the stuff that we really do is, like, when we out here help get somebody out of jail. You know, like, don't, like, that. That's the kind of stuff that people often need money for is, hey, look, man, we got $500 bail. We can't make it.
It's not for tattoos and rims.
No, man. It is for real life. Wow, this is such a wonderful meandering of uproarious, I believe, podcast.
Oh, it is.
We talk about the Black Knight. We got through all of that. I tell you, you talk about awkward. I do imagine that there will be somebody be like, huh, the gay club, huh?
Where is this
about to go? Oh, okay, we're safe.
You might get that email.
No, let me tell you, man, I ain't losing my job over no jokes. I might say something wrong. I might go too far on a cause, but I ain't about to lose my job over no joke. I tell you this story. It's actually funny. We were, a couple weeks ago, some video went around of some Asian dude who, like, was laying on his back and he had, like, a tea set, like a table setting on his stomach with a tablecloth underneath, and he, like, rips off the tablecloth and the set is still sitting there, and there's a note that says Happy New Year, and then he shoots off some, like, confetti shooter from between his legs. It's a whole lot that's going on, but he's an Asian dude, and so people kept asking me if he was Pablo.
Yeah.
Right? So Pablo did something on television about it. And he's like, no, guys, this is not me. And I go, really? That's not you? Eric Reinhold, our boss, his heart is in his throat at that moment, right? Because I'm like, really, really, that's not you? He's like, what? You know, he's like, oh, my God, what are you got? And I was like, I mean, you have that same exact tablecloth and that same
well done,
stuff.
Sir.
Yeah. You know why? Because I ain't about to lose my job by no Joe. You think I'm about to come out here and lose my job to say that all Asians look alike?
that would be a really bad way to
Can
lose
you imagine me going to face my father and be like, hey man, I really appreciate, I'm glad y'all just got that basement finished because, just wanna know if I come, yeah, just, you was watching that day I said about Pablo looking like, I didn't go over. It didn't play very well.
Yeah, nah. that's not the career ender that you want. That's not the last line you want on your Wikipedia.
I can't imagine, like, what does it feel like that moment you say something and it's like,
Do you know it right away?
I feel like you know right away that it could be.
Based on reaction?
Yeah, just something happens. The whole room is like, oh, man. All right. Dominique Foxworth, my man. Check him out. You be doing Get Up. You doing First Take. You do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I'm around.
You do a lot of stuff. Y'all radioing?
Nah, we're not radioing.
So he's got time.
Whoa. Slow down. Don't be telling nobody I had no time. I'm busy. Very busy.
He actually is very busy. He's about to go do something right now. But ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to The Right Time. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thanks, my man Dominique Foxworth. Remember to subscribe to the podcast. Check us out at the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We very much so appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think that you are a hater. And I'll talk to you guys in a couple of days.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.